the great Pat McAfee. Hello, beautiful people. Oh my goodness, it is a new era for the Front Stretch Podcast. If you don't know me, I am Brian Timothy Del Nolan. I have as much excitement as probably a five-year-old. I am so excited to be hosting this podcast, and who better to have my first co-host be the guy that originally started this thing, the OG of host and podcast, the one and only Davey Siegel. My friend, it's bittersweet. The old coming in with the new, little farewell, hello. It's a reunion of some sort. How you doing, buddy?
It's been so long. It's been, what, 7 days since I was last hosting this show? And now look at you, my little boy, all grown up. He mows his lawn during the day. He hosts his podcast in the eve. Brian Timothy Dale Nolan. Look at him go. I'm so proud of you, kiddo.
Thank you. The official introduction. He is a struggling Washington Capitals fan, Wizards fan, Commanders fan, formerly of Front Stretch, now host of Loose Ends on SiriusXM Channel 90 and associate producer. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Davey Siegel. Yeah, Davey.
I love the intros.
I had to make my first official intro.
You love to gas me up like that.
Oh, man. This podcast, folks, will be so enthusiastic. I'm going to make you want to run through a wall at the end of this thing.
I'll be right back. I'm going to go do that.
Okay, I love it. We're going to go above and beyond what Davey started. We're not just going to have drivers. We're going to have crew chiefs. We're going to have spotters. We're going to have personalities. We're even going to have a little bit of maybe not even some NASCAR, maybe some SRX stuff. We're that's down the pipeline, but it's going to be fun. Davey, we'll get to your future in just a little bit, but we got to dive in to what happened on the racetrack. So let's go to the green flag, my friend.
Boogity, boogity, boogity. Let's go racing, boys.
Green flag is out, Davey. Oh, boy. If there was anything that we had to talk about, thank God it was this week, because there was a little bit of everything, and none of it went in NASCAR's favor. I mean, there was right rear tires going down. There's big names wrecking because of the right rear tires down. But, Davey, let's address the elephant in the room. Less than 50 feet away, Ryan Blaney looks like he was going to go to victory lane. Checkered flag was out, and then the yellow flag was out because of Ricky Stenhouse Jr. touching the wall, basically. I mean, I don't get where NASCAR was going with that. Your initial reaction to seeing the checkered and then the yellow and realizing this race wasn't over.
Oh, boy. Man. I picked a hell of a week to leave, huh?
I know, right?
Man. Look, Brian, you know me. You know how I feel about this sport. You know how I feel about the sanctioning body. I love it with all my heart. I want nothing but the best for it. I will support it through and through until I'm blue in the face. That was embarrassing, though. Mm-hmm. That was really, really bad. You made your thoughts pretty clear on the scoop, which I heard profanely, by the way.
And hey, I got permission. I had permission from the boss. He was like, go for
look,
it.
I can't say that I disagreed with you. I really don't. And the fact that the caution was thrown when it was suspect at best. The fact that the rules were as they were, which is the race has to finish under green flag conditions, I think is also suspect, because I think that, you know, given it's an all-star race, I understand you want to differentiate yourself in that specific event from usual races. I understand that. But, you know, having that wrinkle into it, it can add exactly that, a wrinkle into it. And then the whole window net situation and how that unfolded and the safety concern and NASCAR okaying it when they knew that it really wasn't okay. I think the worst thing that could have happened, honestly, besides, God forbid, Ryan Blaney getting injured, was for Denny Hamlin to win that race. Because if Denny wins that race, everybody's talking about how Blaney got screwed out of this one. And Dale Jr., to his credit, I mean, he said it pretty well on Twitter. NASCAR is just glad the window net thing happened, so you're not going to be debating the caution at the end of the race. But trust me when I say, on Channel 90 on SiriusXM, people are talking about the caution too. They're talking about the window net, but they're also talking about the caution. Look, NASCAR is my love, but you can love something and also recognize its faults and want it to improve. Yes, and I think NASCAR themselves, and to Scott Miller's credit and NASCAR's credit, they came out after the race and they said, yep, we messed up on that one. That's on us. But from the safety perspective with the window net, from the officiating perspective, when they threw the caution, it was not the best night for NASCAR overall. The racing product, as we agree upon, it was awful. And I think that that race needs a complete overhaul. I think that there could be a lot of stuff done to it. But when we're talking about this all-star race in 10, 15 years down the road, we're going to remember the caution that shouldn't have been thrown. And we're going to remember the window net that was not secured. And we're going to probably remember how bad of a race it was overall. It was not NASCAR's finest night. Not at all.
That was my problem, Davey, is the window net. I mean, you see Ross Chastain almost go airborne in like an hour and a half before that happened. And then you have a guy that's 95% of his window net is completely down with two laps to go. And Denny Hamlin said it best. Let's air this clip that Denny Hamlin had when talking with Bob Pockrass.
So all I ask is that we know what the rules are and we play by them. Where NASCAR really got away with one is we nearly crashed off two. And so when I send them headfirst into traffic, and the wind is down, the wind is down, I don't know, you know, then they got a lawsuit on my hands.
I don't know whether they thought he had gotten it up there because he was trying to get it up, but could you see it down on the restart?
Yeah, of course he's trying to get it up, but inside the car, you can't get it back up. It's impossible. They got those things so tight anyway. Again, most deserving winner, but if you make a mistake, you make a mistake, and I don't want charity. I just want to play by the rules. That's it.
And then here is Ryan Blaney talking about what Denny Hamlin said.
Yeah, I'd be upset too if I was in his position. I mean, you're on a second and, you know, the guy makes a mistake and puts the window net down and you expect, you know, it to be handed to you and the leader get black flagged. So I can understand his frustration for sure.
Now, Davey, I totally get with Hamlin. Now, I don't think there would be a lawsuit coming out, but if I was in Hamlin's shoes, I would be very scary if I was battling side by side with a guy with no window net going 180 miles an hour battling for the win. I mean, God forbid, like Hamlin says, they wreck. We don't know what happened to Ryan Blaney. As gruesome as that sounds, I mean, you have safety for a reason, and NASCAR says safety, safety, safety. And what they said basically with two laps to go is, oh, well, we want to have the best show possible, not a race, but a show. And that's where I don't like any of this. It's because they wanted to create a spectacle. They put the caution out because they wanted to have a good finish, even though it was a terrible race.
And look, I agree with that. And I understand that. I understand where they're coming from, because as much as we want to talk about the integrity of the sport versus the entertainment aspect of it, entertainment does factor in. And the all-star race, more than any other race, definitely factors in and I think skews towards entertainment more than it does towards the racing aspect. But at what price, right? And how much of that entertainment are you going to have in sacrificing the integrity of your sport, right? It's a tough balance and it's a tough tightrope to walk. I think that NASCAR has done a good job to their credit over the last few years, especially recently, in terms of balancing the entertainment versus the integrity of that sport. But again, Saturday was not, or Sunday night was not the best show of that, because the actual product on track was lacking significantly. And then the entertainment aspect, they tried to ramp up significantly, but I think they missed the mark. So look, not every race is going to be like this. Not every all-star race is going to be like this. I don't think we're going to have a window net situation like this.
I hope
happen
not.
Probably ever again. I think NASCAR has learned their lesson on that.
I sure hope so.
And I mean, it's neither here nor there, but Denny Hamlin probably would have been one of, if not the only people that were against NASCAR bringing Ryan Blaney in, saying you can fix your window net and get your spot back. You know, I understand that if they were to do that, that's against the rules, because the way that the rules written, the window net was not properly secured to my knowledge. And if you were to have pitted, you know, reattached that and rehatched it properly, he shouldn't have been able to maintain his position. But it's the all-star race. Things happen differently. Things are done differently. So I can see both sides, but at the end of the day, that situation never should have happened. And the caution never should have been thrown. And the window net would have been down because the race should have been over, but it wasn't. And here we are.
Last but not least, on this past week, what should the All-Star Race do location-wise, format-wise, and then what does the future hold for Texas Motor Speedway?
Oh, man. You're hitting me with the hard ones, Brian.
Trust me. I got to impress the boss in the first week, man. I got to bring the hammer down.
Hey-o.
Boom.
Oh, man. You can go a lot of different ways with this. The last article I wrote for Front Stretch, NASCAR Mailbox, I called for the All-Star race to just go away because I don't think it needs to be here. I think you have a glorified All-Star race, not just every week. And I know that's a age-old argument, but you saw what the Clash did this past year, earlier this season. That's the All-Star race to me.
Yeah, same.
It has the glitz. It has the glamour. It has the appeal. It has the sizzle. It had everything that Texas did. And I think that the Clash, whether or not you have it at the Coliseum, whether or not you have it at North Wilkesboro, whether or not you have it at Hickory, whether or not you have it at Chicago, I don't care. But the Clash to me is everything that the All-Star race should be and can be, but it's not. And I understand that getting rid of the All-Star race in the next few years, that's not going to happen because of the way that the television deal is structured, the way that SMI, their deals are structured with NASCAR. So I'm fully understanding that my idea and my, I'm not even going to say hope or wish because I don't want it to go away, but I just think that it should. That's not going to happen though. I think that what can be done is a myriad of different things. You've seen drivers, crew chiefs, former drivers, executives, media, they've all lobbied for their specific format, but I think that there really are some legs starting to grow on the idea of taking it to local short tracks, whether it's in the Southeast, whether it's all across the country. I don't think anybody would hate the idea of lining them up at Hickory Motor Speedway, or if North Wilkesboro's revival comes to fruition, imagine an all-star race at North Wilkesboro. And here's the thing, Brian, the racing, even if it flops, it's better than what we just had, because you're going to a place that will re-inject new life, new energy, a new fan base, something new to see on TV, a new place for fans to go. It would just be new. You understood at the Clash, right? Part of the appeal of that event and part of the reason why that was such a success in terms of television ratings, interest, promotions in the Los Angeles market was because it was something new. It was something different. NASCAR's done a great job of being new, progressive, and different when it comes to every facet of their company and their sport. And I think for the All-Star race, they've tried to do that in the sense of the formats and adjusting those. But at some point, it becomes too convoluted, too complicated to understand, and a little bit gimmicky for some traditional fans. I think if you take this event to some local short tracks, you try to reinvigorate the short tracks while also reinvigorating your event, I think the All-Star race can be saved. But in a perfect world, to be honest, I would just get rid of it. I don't want to think that way, but that's how I feel. I know that's not going to happen. So I think in the future, if they were to maybe make a whole couple days out of it, do a legit pit crew competition, have a burnout competition, it could be similar to the banquet at Nashville. Make it a whole event. Make it someplace new every single year. Re-inject some life into the event that so desperately needs it.
I like what Jordan Bianchi said from the Teardown. Make it after the season, during Nashville Banquet Week at the fairgrounds, one-day show, practice, qualify, have the open, 100 laps, halfway distance break, no stages, and just go for it.
Sure.
I love that.
I'm for it. Let's love do it. Look, again, I say this all, I've said it on the podcast so many times. No disrespect to the fine folks at Texas Motor Speedway. No disrespect to the fine NASCAR folks at Texas or Marcus Smith or SMI. Texas is the worst racetrack on the schedule and it sucks. I'm sorry.
So bad.
That's how I feel. And I think that's a fact for most NASCAR fans.
Denny Hamlin said it best on the Dale Jr. Download. What needs to fix Texas Motor Speedway?
Bulldozer, baby.
You start with a bulldozer. And he's
it
right.
It can't get much worse. It, you know?
Yeah.
So we can only go up from here.
The resin ruined that track, or PJ1, or whatever the hell it was. I don't know exactly what it was.
Ruined it for NASCAR, ruined it for IndyCar. Mm-hmm. It's done, unfortunately.
I don't know, but they got to do something because it's so bad. It's the worst that it's ever been, and it will continue.
I don't know what they can do. And you asked me a question earlier, what's the future of Texas? I didn't even answer that because I was just on my diatribe. I don't know what the future is. Yeah. I don't think they're going to give up on it, and I don't think that they financially can – you know, repave it and reprofile it again so soon. I don't know what the future is.
I think they're stuck between a rock and a hard place because, like you said, do they have the money for it? And then they don't want to lose a Fort Worth area. I mean, that's a huge market in itself. So what can they do? I mean, it's just up in the air, but we'll have to see and wait what happens. Stay right there, Davey. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to play the interview that my good friend and our content director here at Funtridge, Michael Massey, did with the guy that Davey knows very, very well, Derek Krause. So when we come back, Michael and Derek, dive in.
This is Michael Massey with Front Stretch, and we are joined by Derek Krause, the driver of the number 19 Napa Chevrolet. Now, that's taking some getting used to say for this year. So this past week, your throwback was to the boss man, Bill McNally himself. What was that like running a throwback for him?
I thought it was really cool. The way we planned it out, I thought it made it cooler really altogether, just because of how it planned out. I came up with the idea and just kind of went with it. I texted his daughter Haley and then one of the PR guys over in California, and I said, is there any way that we could do this? And he was like, there's been times that I've thrown in his own throwbacks into ideas, and he responded to me, don't ever throw them in there anymore for ideas. And I was like, oh boy, well, I told him I'd take the heat if there was any heat, because I thought there might be, but overall it was really cool. He actually didn't know about it at all. Or for all I know, he didn't know about it. So he found out about it one day in the shop when I put the truck underneath the cover and showed it to him.
Why didn't he want any throwbacks to himself? Why was he so funny?
It's just the way Bill is.
I guess that's a humble guy, not wanting the attention on himself. So he took it pretty well, though, that you guys surprised
him. He took it very well. I thought it was pretty cool. And he actually, before I showed it to him, he actually showed me a picture. It was weird. Like, for all I know, he didn't know about it, but like 5 minutes before I showed it to him, he showed me the picture of like the exact car that I picked to throw it back to. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then I brought him out by the truck, and then he knew right away of what car it was and when he ran it and where he ran it. So that was really special.
That's awesome. They showed it during the broadcast too. Yeah. And that was a cool looking car. But so you had Napa was willing to, change things up on their look a little bit to do that throwback. And you're part of the Napa family now. It's got, your Napa teammates with Chase Elliott, Ron Capps, Brad Sweet, Alexander Rossi. What's it like being part of the Napa family with those guys?
It's really cool. Like you said, it's pretty much like a family. We all get along. And a couple of weeks ago, we were actually all at Napa headquarters doing an employee appreciation day, which I thought was really cool. And it's a lot of people that are behind it all, working really hard and making sure everything's going in the right direction. And that's always important to have good people behind a big company like that. And it's an honor to be able to carry their logo around the racetrack every single weekend.
Yeah, I've been watching racing for 20 years. I didn't know till last year that Napa actually stood for something. It was National Auto Parts
Association. Yep.
Yeah. I just thought it was Napa, just the word Napa.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty fun. So Darlington, 2 years ago, you almost got the win there. And you didn't. Do you feel like if you could have gotten that one, it would have like led to rifling off a bunch of wins, or I don't know, does that one eat at you at all that it got away?
Yeah, but I mean, to be 100% honest with you, I'm not really a big fan of Darlington. Everybody says because I finished second that I really like the place, but honestly, I don't really enjoy, like, that's not the one that I circle and be like, this is going to be the one that we get our first win at. But it's different. It's challenging in its own ways, but it is a lot of fun to go there. It's just not my favorite. But like you said, if we could have got that win, it would have been not easier, but I feel like we could have got more already. I mean, like everyone says, once you get that first one, the first one's always the hardest. And once you get the first one, it always kind of comes not easier, but more, I don't know how to say it, but more We go with these. I guess.
I know what you mean. I can't think of the word for it either. But yeah, it does seem like when a guy wins, then just a couple. Like Ross Chastain in the Cup Series now. Now he's going on a tear. So you guys switched from Toyota to Chevrolet this year. You moved to the GMS campus, have an alliance with GMS now. What's that change been like?
I think it's been really good, to be honest with you. I mean, Toyota was a great manufacturer to work with, and everyone there was really easy to talk to and really friendly. And like you said, that's another one of those big family type deals. But time went on and we closed that book, and now we open the book with Chevy. And I feel like that's been a great partnership so far. And then having the alliance with GMS, I feel like they've been able to help us a lot with our program, and putting all the right pieces in the right places is a big thing in the sport. So that's what we're trying to do right now. And I feel like we're getting really close to it. And hopefully this weekend at Kansas, we can have a good run and start the season rolling with some momentum. I feel like our last couple of races haven't been very good, and it's hard to get on a momentum streak when you have those kind of races. So hopefully we can have a good run and finish in top 10 or top 5, or maybe even get a win.
Yeah. Do you think kind of that the slow start to the season is because of that manufacturer change and just all the work that guys had to do to switch over to Chevy?
No, I feel like my instance, I feel like I've been in the wrong place at the wrong time multiple times, like Bristol, Las Vegas, and Daytona, of course, but Daytona, I can't really control that at all. But it's just kind of been a slow start, and hopefully here this 7-week stretch that we have, we can turn it on and have a bunch of good runs.
Yeah. So you won just about everything there is to win in the K&N ARCA East-West days. So what's that transition been like to trucks now that, is it just that much harder? Does the competition step up that much moving up to trucks?
Yeah, it's that. And then also there's just so many more variables that go into a truck race. You got pit stops. If you screw up on pit stops, you can lose a bunch of track position. And then you got the race. Track position is so important and key, and everyone's so close that it's tough to get ahead of somebody. And just being able to be on the racetrack, and if you screw up a little bit, you're going to lose 5-6 spots. So it's a whole different ball game. I mean, it's definitely more challenging for sure. The competition, the people in the trucks are a lot better, and it's just overall, it's a lot harder. So it's been a learning experience for me just because of all the variables that go into the race, with me hitting my marks every lap, to hitting the right spot in the pit stops, to not speeding on pit road or running my lights as hard as I can to get the most speed down pit road. There's just a lot more that go into a race compared to an ARCA race to a truck race.
Yeah, you just go all out the whole time in the ARCA East.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about the pit stops and all that. So Bill McAnally, he's been around in ARCA East and West Series forever. He's gotten a lot of guys their start down there. But you're the guy he moved up to trucks with. How does that make you feel? Everyone else kind of had to find another owner, find another opportunity elsewhere. How does it make you feel that, you're the guy he stepped up with to trucks?
I feel like I feel good about that. Honestly, it's kind of a big step for him, and then also me too. I mean, like I said about the competition and everything, and then also on his part with buying trucks and getting the right people. I feel like a lot of the sport is being able to have the right people. If you don't have the right people, you aren't gonna go fast and be successful whenever you race. So just from that aspect, and then just from when I was young with Bill, I mean, from my first test on, he's kind of just always welcomed me in really well, and I've learned so much from him from an owner standpoint, and how to work with sponsors and being doing the right thing to the right people is always important in the sport to keep a sponsor and keep everyone happy. Really, you can't burn bridges, and that's a big thing in the sport. So I've learned a lot from him, and like I said about him accepting me in, I feel like really his whole family, from Deanna, Alex, and Haley, I mean, they've kind of became my second family. I go out with them during school and go out to California and stay there, sleep in their guest bedroom for 2 weeks and 3 weeks at a time. So wow. it's definitely, we've built a really good relationship, and I feel like that helps going to the racetrack with him and having a good relationship like that.
Yeah, for sure. What's that been like, you know, being there for this new team and, you know, kind of working with them to build something together?
I'm just the driver. So, I can help Bill. I mean, if there's anything that I'm capable of helping him with, I mean, I know what he likes and doesn't like. So that's always helpful for him. He's always calling me asking if there's anything that he can do different or anything that needs to be done different in the shop. And he might be 2,000 miles away, but trust me, he keeps his finger on this place pretty well. So it's definitely been fun transition learning for sure. So it's been interesting, and you learn a lot, and if you make a mistake, you correct it and do the best that you can with it.
Yeah, for sure. How does this team compare size wise to, like, you know, GMS next door or Cowboys Sports, as far as like personnel and resources, things like that?
I feel like we have just as good as people, just not as many people. KBM and GMS, I mean, they both have, and they got shop full of people that work there all the time. And I mean, we've got a good amount of people, but I mean, as you know, with a business, you can always use more and get more people. But I feel like everyone that we have right now is definitely capable of doing their job, and they do a good job doing it. So it's definitely, it helps you go to sleep at night knowing that I got the people working on my trucks that I do. So it's definitely good to be here. And I really enjoy driving for Bill and being at the shop.
Okay. So every week in the truck series, there seems to be, maybe not every week, but quite often there seems to be complaints in the truck series of just not a lot of respect going around as a whole among the drivers. What do you think, is there anything you think could be done to kind of fix that respect issue, I guess?
A lot of it's the people that sit on their couch and just kind of judge everybody, you know? But the way I look at it is, you look at college football and NFL football. I mean, people on Sundays, they've made it to the highest spot they can make it in NASCAR and racing in general in the United States. So, I mean, people in the truck series and Xfinity series, I mean, they're basically in college football trying to prove that they can do it and run up front every week. And yeah, there's mistakes that are made, but if you run up front, people see that. So I feel like that's the reason that it happens. I feel like the truck racing is really aggressive, but that's fun. I feel like, I mean, if you ask anybody, we'll only watch the truck race on Friday night just because of how exciting and how much action there is on the racetrack with the trucks. So it's definitely aggressive, but I feel like it's a lot of fun too. I mean, there's a lot of moves that get made, and if you make a mistake, you better hold on. You better, because you're probably going to fall back 5-6 positions. So it's a lot of fun, and like I said, just it's aggressive series, and I feel like it's just because of it's all us younger people trying to make it to the next level.
Yeah, so a bunch of people kind of honing the craft still, and I guess that extra pressure to stand out so that you do get to that next level. Yeah. So a little lighter note, how do you feel about the door bumper clear guys? They take some shots at you every now and then.
Yeah, it's it's part of it, I guess. I don't really listen to their podcast. I'm sure Freddie wouldn't like to hear that right now, but yeah, I don't. The only time I listened to it was that one time that guy called in. I thought it was pretty funny. I have no idea who he was, but he sounded like he was from Wisconsin, so that was cool. But I honestly don't really even listen to it. It's just three guys having fun talking on a podcast. There's a lot of people that get, I don't know how to say it nicely, but get hurt about that. But you can't, there's a lot of people that say a lot of mean things, but you can't let that get to you or let it affect you at all.
What was the caller? I don't remember that one.
I probably can't play it on here.
Probably have to a couple bleeps.
Yeah.
I'll have to try to find that afterwards. Does that, it seems like that relationship with Freddie is one where you two do kind of like you guys like each other, but you take shots at each other, joking and stuff like that. Is that fair to assume you guys just have kind of a playful, I guess, relationship?
Yeah, he's been with me since I was 12 years old. I was racing late models down at New Smyrna, and Herm was spotting for Ty, and then I needed a spotter one night at New Smyrna for speed weeks, and Freddie said he'll come over and do it. And he's got a funny story behind it. I don't really remember it, but he's got a funny story behind it on how it all went down. But he's kind of been with me ever since. He knows what I need to hear, and if I need to be jacked up, he'll jack me up for sure, which is good. I have no problem with that at all. It's part of it. And like you said, we take shots at each other, but we can take it. We don't get hurt by that or offended by that at all. So it's a lot of fun, and he's always a good time to be around.
Yeah. How long ago was that you guys got paired?
Eight years ago, probably.
8 years.
It was when I was 12, so I'm 20 now. I'm kind of old.
Hey, don't say that to me. I'm the big 3-0, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, you say it yourself as old. It's making me feel ancient. But
Yeah.
Yeah, you're still a young one. That's all the questions I got for you. Thanks so much for joining me here, and glad we could work something out.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me on.
Big thanks to Michael Massey and Derek Krause for that great interview. Davey, Derek a little bit, and I when I was listening to that interview, I thought of one perfect word, and it's a word that people usually describe myself. A goofball. He's just a goofball, and that's a good thing. It's no disrespect, because I love being a goofball, and that's just who he is.
I think you're the biggest goofball of the bunch.
Darn right I am, and I'm so darn proud of that, my friend. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, Derek's a pretty big goofball, I would say. There have been some times when we're just killing time in a rain delay for a K&N West race, just thinking back on those old memories, and brings a smile to my face, but yeah, on the racetrack, though, he's shown some market improvement this season. I think that's fair to say. Last year, and even parts of this year, he's been a bit of a wrecking ball. Mm-hmm. His spotter, Freddie Kraft, has talked pretty openly. Derek's talked a little bit less openly about it, but I know that's the way that he feels, and he understands that. But it's kind of the culture of the truck series now. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, yeah. Well, if you're going to try to move me, well, I'm going to for sure move you, but I think that Derek and that MHR team, they've gotten better as the year's gone on, and expanded to two trucks. That's been a big undertaking for them. Bill McAnally has said so, but I'm seeing some improvement from him, and I'm seeing some maturity from him as well in the truck series year two for him. So good interview as always with Mr. Massey. And I just wonder if Derek can actually pronounce Giannis's last name, because last time I checked, he still was way, way off.
Michael actually asked Derek if he can say Antetokounmpo, and Derek was like, I'm not even going to try. Davey already asked me one time a few years ago, and I still can't. So I'm not even going to try. He actually asked Siri to pronounce it, and she did. So he's not even trying anymore.
Dude, I literally said, can you pronounce Giannis's last name? Young Cumpanato, he says in his little Wisconsin accent. Oh yeah, Young Cumpanato. I don't know. It's not that hard. I can spell it actually based off memory.
So I'm reading a book about Mike Krzyzewski, and I've seen Krzyzewski.
I can't spell that.
I could have like a week ago. Now I'm, you know, a little foggy in the brain right now, but I used to. But as I dive into more of that book, I probably will. But Anton Antetokounmpo, I'm still way out there. I can say
Antetokounmpo. Antetokounmpo.
Unbelievable.
Take it to the bank.
I don't even know if that was right, but I'm still unbelievable. Unbelievable. Speller and a great NASCAR reporter, Davey Siegel, ladies and gentlemen, from a great reporter to hopefully a great race. That's how you do a transition, Mr. Adam Cheek, host of Stock Car Scoop, by the way. Coke 600 preview. Davey, I'm just going to flat out ask you this. Do we need a 600-mile race in today's day and age?
No, but I think it's okay that we have this one.
Okay.
I've been very adamant on this podcast and on different shows that I think the schedule's too long, the races are too long, there's too much NASCAR, and there needs to be less of it to drive up a bigger demand for it. With that being said, I think you keep the crown jewels as they are. You keep the Daytona 500, you keep the Southern 500, you keep the Coca-Cola 600. Now, I would be first in line to make this race 600 kilometers instead of 600 miles. I'll be first in line, but that's not a hill that I'm willing to die on. If you want to have a 600-mile race, fine. I know it's not the test of man and machine that it once was and that it once was billed as. I think the drivers, the fans, they all recognize that. But there still is a lot of nostalgia with this race. The number 600, it pops out a little bit. Being able to sit on your couch or sit in the grandstands instead of for 2 to 3 to 4 hours, but for 3 to 4 to 5 hours, some people enjoy that. You know, I'll give it to him. And this is not a hill that I'm willing to die on because it's a crown jewel race. Now, any other race that's not a crown jewel that's 500 miles, I'll die on that hill. But to answer your question, Brian, we don't need a 600-mile race. I don't think that there's a place for it in the sport anymore. But if the majority of the fans and the drivers, they want to keep it, then you know what? Fine. I'll enjoy it just as much as I have before.
Now, what kind of racing are we going to be seeing? Are we going to be seeing the racing we saw at Texas, or are we going to be seeing the racing we saw at Las Vegas, Kansas, and so on and so forth?
God, I hope we don't get what we got at Texas. That'd be a long freaking night. My God, it can't get much worse, right? I think
kidding.
On a serious note, you're actually going to get a pretty good show because the next-gen car, even though we know that it's really solid at mile and a half besides Texas, because if the next-gen car can't save Texas, then nothing can. I think you're going to get a good show because we've seen on the intermediates, it's good. And oh, by the way, when this next gen car was being poked, prodded and tested, everybody tested at Charlotte Motor Speedway, right? From the start of the next gen development to the current iteration of the aero package and the car that we have now, Charlotte was the proving ground literally for this car to be poked, prodded and tinkered on. And I think that you'll probably get a really solid race. It also may be a bit longer than we're used to seeing with the Coca-Cola 600 because, Brian, as you know, on these mile and a half, we're seeing more natural cautions, which is a great thing. Don't get me wrong. But we've kind of come accustomed to long green flag runs, stage breaks after 100 laps apiece, and you just go about your race and you do your thing, right? Well, I think there's going to be some more cautions, and maybe that paves the way for a little bit more strategy because these cars are a handful. They're harder to control. I mean, I remember at one of those first tests, Tyler Reddick absolutely just looping it by himself off turn four, coming to pit road. I think you're going to see a lot of that. And you're probably going to see a lot of it happen by really, really good drivers, championship drivers. You could even see that happen multiple times by the same driver over the course of 600 miles and 400 laps in 4 to 5 hours. So racing wise, I think you're going to be pleased and the fans going to be pleased with what they see. I think it's going to be reminiscent of the other mile and a half tracks besides Texas that we've seen, but given that there's more race to have, I think you're going to have more cautions, and in turn, you're going to have a longer race time-wise.
I mean, it can't go longer than what we've been having. I mean, these are 3 to 4 hour races, and I mean, my ADD can't hold on to that much time, so I mean, I may need to go outside and take a walk and then come back, and I'll probably miss about 20 laps, but that's no here nor there. David, we got two other races before that, though. It's the best motorsports weekend in the country. Start with Monaco, yeah. Then you go to Indy. Let's go with Indy. First ever race at the Oval for seven-time champion Jimmy Johnson. Expectation for seven-time for you are what?
I was actually just having this conversation with my dad at dinner tonight about
nice.
This. You see, and you know, I know you listened to the Teardown too. Jordan and Jeff mm-hmm. of The Athletic were debating this topic, and you know, they're discussing whether or not just finishing all the laps is a success, or actually contending for the win is a success, or finishing top five, right? I think getting a top 10 finish for Jimmy would be a successful day, given the prestige of the event, 33 cars in the field, 500 miles. The fact that he does have more oval experience than anybody else in the entire field, I think that does matter. But I think also the fact that he has some of the least amount of experience when it comes to driving Indy cars at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, that matters even more. You can't ignore the fact that he's in a rocket ship. Chip Ganassi Racing brings unbelievably prepared race cars to any IndyCar race. Moreover, the Indy 500, his teammate Scott Dixon starting on the pole. He's had a rocket ship, fastest qualifying time in the history of the 500 mile race there.
So fast.
So equipment wise, Jimmy's good. He's mm-hmm. set. Talent wise, in terms of a raw race car driver, Jimmy's there. Jimmy's set. I still think though, the experience and the lack of it that he has in Indy cars at IMS, that's probably what's going to hinder him a little bit. And that's why I'm not going to pick him as one of my favorites to win the race. Would I be shocked if he wins it? No, I'd be surprised. But I don't know if I'd be shocked. You know what I mean? I still think though, he's probably going to have a little bit tougher time navigating through traffic, and I'm going to go out on a limb. And I think Jordan said the same thing. I don't want this to happen. You know, we don't root for drivers. We root for stories. I think Jimmy winning would be an incredible story. And I think this is probably,
it'll be so wild.
The first Indy 500 that he's going to have in a string of potentially many. Something tells me that his inexperience in the draft may come back to bite him. I don't know if he's going to finish the race. I hope he does, but I could see a scenario where his inexperience bites him a little bit. I think to answer your question though, if he were to get a top 10 finish and he were to show speed, get through that race unscathed, gain some respect from his competitors, and do what the equipment allows him to do, I think that'd be a really solid day for seventh time.
I think we keep forgetting about a guy that literally did one race in the history of his career, 2014, started 12th and finished sixth, Kurt Busch. He finished all the laps and scored a top 10. I think if seven time does that, I think he's going to get a top 10 too. Thing is, like you said, is he going to go a little bit too far and go for a little bit extra and end up in the fence? I hope that doesn't happen. Hopefully he gets a top 10 for storylines. And for that sake, I just feel like he may go for it a little too much. That's just my opinion.
You saw that save he had in qualifying. That's, you can't teach that.
That is a straight up dog move. I mean,
that's a dog.
Oh man. Ooh. That was, my goodness, that I would need a new set of drawers after that. I can promise you that
I
much.
One and I was watching.
Yeah, you're not kidding. You're not the only one. Last but not least, starting in the morning with Monaco. Always love watching at Monaco. And there's been rumors about a international driver coming to NASCAR for Justin Marks' team and the number 91. Thoughts on that? And then just thoughts on Monaco in itself.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always going to watch the race and I'm always excited for it because it's literally one of, if not my favorite days of the entire year. It's just wall-to-wall racing. I think it's 1,100 miles.
Ooh.
Monaco, though, I mean, historically, it has the prestige and it has the history. In terms of the racing product, similar to Texas, not much going on, to be honest. I mean, you don't watch that race for the actual racing. You watch it because of the tradition, because of the prestige, because of the glitz, the glamour, right? Monaco is a historic course for many reasons. It's not historic because of the passing that happens. It's historic because of the venue. It's historic because of the history associated with the race. And it's historic because of the sights and the sounds and everything that comes with Monaco. I'm excited for it, especially seeing how F1 is still booming in the States here. I'll probably going to go with the hometown boy, Charles Leclerc, to get that victory. I think last year was heartbreak for him. Didn't even get to start the race because Ferrari had a Ferrari moment, but given that Red Bull's got a lot of straight line speed and Ferrari's a little bit better in the corners, I'm going to give them the edge. Hopefully Charles can bring it home in his home race. That'd be pretty cool to see.
I'll go Verstappen then. I think he's going to get the job done. I know you said that Red Bull's got the straight line speed, but I think maybe a little bit of pit strategy or something, and he may sneak a win there. Indy 500 pick?
Ed Carpenter, another hometown boy, gets her done. Why not?
Okay. I'm going to go with the GOAT of IndyCar racing. Guys won as many championships, I think, as Jimmy has. Scott Dixon, I think he'll start on the pole and win from the
He's got a rocket ship, man. He's,
that I've never seen someone go so fast. It's incredible. Last but not least in our race picks, Coke 600, who's going to be walking out with the trophy at the end of the night.
Well, I know you didn't ask Robin, but her pick's Denny Hamlin, which is interesting. My dad brought up a good point. Denny Hamlin loves to get pit road speeding penalties. 600 miles, a lot of trips to pit road. I think the over-under on speeding penalties for Denny Hamlin is 1.5. And I might take the
over. I might take the over, to be honest.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it's probably going to be a Hendrick Motorsports brigade party up front. And something tells me it's going to be Kyle Larson's night. I think JGR is going to be strong. I know Martin Truex Jr. is really good in this race historically, but something just tells me it's going to be Kyle Larson's night. So I'll roll with the five.
There's something about that 24 car and that 24 team that's just rocket ships.
Okay.
And so I'm going to go with Willie B. I think Willie B is going to get the job done when one of the big crown jewel races. And I think the 24 car goes to victory lane at the end of the night at Charlotte, my friend.
Hendrick and Hendrick. I like it.
Exactly. Let's dive in. Checkered flag time.
Checkered flag, here I come. Oh, no!
Now, usually, checkered flags, we'd be doing some do's and don'ts and some William Hill picks, but we're going to do it a little bit differently because I've known this guy since 2016. We dove into we went to Meridian, Idaho together, and we saw a guy named Todd Gilliland. Go to victory lane. Oh my gosh. We saw Haley Deegan's first ever win. We talked to guys that are now in the Xfinity series, Noah Gregson, Todd Gilliland, Derek Krause is in the trucks. You were my first ever front stretch person to meet. You're the one that gives me the most advice. You're the guy that I'm replacing and I can't thank you enough. It's been a fun few years with you, man. I'm going to miss you to death. I love you to death. You'll always be one of my best friends. 5 years, my friend, since I've been known you in person, and I'm thankful for you, buddy.
You see this tear?
Yeah, I know.
I won't be going far. I'm still here for you, and I will come on your show whenever, wherever you want. It's 10:44 Eastern time in the evening, and I'm sitting here talking to you, so don't say I never did nothing for you. I will clear my schedule for you, Brian Nolan. I will have you mow my grass when I have grass on my property. And on a serious note, it's been great to develop a friendship with you and a professional relationship too at Front Stretch. I remember that day at Meridian. Those are fun times. We're just missing Heather DeBow, and we can get the band back together. Oh, but
love Heather.
It's been great. It's been great working at Front Stretch. I mean, I kind of said it in the email I sent to the staff when I was saying goodbye, but there's no chance that I would be anywhere close to where I'm at now professionally and personally if it weren't for all the people at Front Stretch, notably our editor-in-chief, majority leader, Tom Bowles. He is the man with the plan, and he has done so much for me personally and professionally, and I can't thank him enough for that. I feel like a race car driver. Can't thank my guys enough, but it's true. I know how they feel, and I know this podcast is in great hands. When Dustin Albino left it in my hands, I told him I would do him proud, and I know you're going to do me proud too, so you know, my phone's always open. And if you ever need a guest spot, you know the man to call. I'm always here.
I love it, my friend. It's big shoes to fill. But when I heard I was taking over, I was so excited for you personally. Because I immediately texted you because I was so damn excited for you. Because I knew you have lived and breathed the sport since the very, very days when you were a kid. And I'm so proud of you for just the person you've become, and I know you're going to do good things. So let's get off into the old sappy stuff. You're still going to be around. You're still going to be hosting Loose Ends on Sirius XM at NASCAR Radio Channel 90 for you. I know Mama Nolan has a Sirius XM subscription, so she'll be listening.
Hey.
I know she always got your back.
Ever since I gave her that garage tour at Daytona, she's been a fan.
Oh yeah, she loves you. And I think the feeling is mutual, but I'm very proud of you. For those that don't follow him already, and I don't know why, where can people follow you?
Davey Center on Twitter, Davey_theman_4 on IG, TikTok, Davey Siegel, Facebook page. Just search my name. Just search my name on any social media platform. Y'all can find me. And hopefully I'll make time that you follow on my social media pages worth your while, even Mama Nolan.
I love it. Davey, I love you to death, buddy. I'm so proud of you, and I can't wait to see your future success many, many years down the road, buddy.
I love you too, buddy. You talk about big shoes to fill. You know, I am a size 13, so they are pretty actually big shoes.
I'm a size 9.5.
Wow.
I know, dude.
You know what they say, small feet.
Yeah, we're not going there. I don't want to get in trouble with the boss.
Wrap it up.
Yeah, wrapping it up for Davey. Everybody associated with Front Stretch. This is the Front Stretch Podcast, New Era Edition. I am Brian Nolan. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk with you next week. Co-host Michael Massey.
Small feet.